Welcome back to the Better Video Podcast, where we're unlocking our best self one episode at a time. My name is Grace Garcia, and this is my wonderful husband, David Garcia.
What's up?
So, just like how we've been recently doing, any updates? Or especially on your ankle situation, I know a lot of people keep asking you.
My ankle's still messed up.
It's been how long?
Since I last ran a week and one day. Or no, 2 weeks and one day.
But you felt it a little bit
wrong. I've been feeling it like a little bit better. And then I test it out. And then it just like lets me know like, no, I'm not ready. Mm. Like on Sunday, I was like, oh, I feel like it's getting better. But it was like, it was feeling like it was getting better. And also I was frustrated of waiting. And so I ran in this like in the same spot for like 1 minute. And just that, like yesterday, my ankle was bugging me a little bit. And so I guess I just have to be patient. And I won't have time this week, but most likely next week, I'll probably look for the doctor that I need to find to. I mean, at this point, I think I'd like to get like an x-ray and see what's going on. Mm. But I'm trying to find like different ways to stay active. So today, for the first time in a long time, I went biking.
How'd that feel?
It felt good. According to ChatGPT, I'm able to do it. It did feel a little tender at the beginning, but right now it feels fine. ChatGPT said that I'm able to do it. Frustrated, wishing that I could run. There's less than 15 weeks left. So that's also, I was talking to a friend today and I'm like, it's less than 15 weeks away. Let's say it takes another 2 to 3 weeks to heal. That leaves me only like 12 weeks, which is about 3 months. And then it's the thought of, okay, it's not like on the first week that I'm back running that I'll be able to run like 12 miles on my long run. Mm. Now I got to start from almost like scratch and work my way up again to make sure that I don't injure it or whatever. So
yeah.
It's just like going back to running 3 miles and then like 6 miles for my long run and then 7, then 8, then 9 and like slowly ramp up. And holy smokes, as I was already at 12 miles, I was about to ramp up to 15 miles and 20 miles. And my plan was to run 20 miles twice before the marathon just to, actually one time I was planning to run up to 24 miles.
Wow.
And nobody really advises that. So don't follow what I'm doing. And, you know, some people might be listening to me and thinking oh, this is the dumbest thing that you could do.
Probably thinking that's what you have.
But here's my thought process. Like the full marathon is 26.2 miles, right? And in every single training plan that I've seen, everybody talked about, they say never go past 20 miles. But then when people do the marathon, everyone always says the real race starts at 20 miles. So my thought process is, why would you never try going past 20 miles before the marathon? Like you're leaving an unknown for like the biggest day.
Mm-hmm.
Why not get the unknown out of the way before the big day? That way when the big day comes, and if you do struggle, you go, I've been here before and I've made it. Granted, the thought process is past 20 miles, you're not really benefiting from the run. You're more going into like the area where you could probably injure yourself. But in my thought, I'm just like, if I'm going to be good at 26, I'm going to be good at 24. And like, why leave such a big gap of 6 miles of unknown?
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's about an hour, let's say, for my pace, a little less than an hour maybe for my pace. And it's just like, okay, so for an hour, I don't know if like at 10 minutes into that hour, like I'll be okay. 20 minutes, like I'm going to feel a certain way. Like I'd like to know what I'm going to feel during those miles.
Yeah.
So anyways, that was my plan, but I doubt I'm going to be able to do that now too. So we will see how that goes, but I am getting nervous. It's frustrating. And I would never use a D word because that's not where I'm at, but
it's, what's the D word?
Like depressed.
Oh.
Like I'm not depressed about it, but like it's frustrating.
No, you're upset. I feel like.
Yeah, I'm upset. I'm frustrated. Like, I just wish I could. I wish I was like a car and I could just like remove this ankle and replace it with another one. Even if it costs money, like I would do it. At this point, I would do it.
Yeah.
Just so I can get back, you know, to running and accomplishing my goals. But yeah, right now it's kind of a coin flip. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. That sounds refreshing. You need to see a physical therapist.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like I'm very, I guess, pessimistic when it comes to doctors. Because, okay, only if they maybe do like an x-ray or an MRI scan or something like that, will they be able to like actually tell me like, oh, like there's a little tear here or something like that, right? No, but
you'd be surprised because sometimes when like just by you, they'll tell you like move it this way, move it that way. And just by like feeling them or they'll start like massaging things like, oh, this here does not feel.
Yeah, maybe. Like you'd be surprised. I would honestly love it. But my fear is, hey, I'm feeling this. This is what happened. Here's where I'm at. And they go, yeah, I couldn't really tell you 100%. It sounds like your ankle. And like for them not to give me a definite answer, like I would love to know definitely this is what it is. This is how long it's going to take. Because right now I'm guessing, right? Like it's been
2 weeks. Exactly how bad, how much worse can it be than you're just going to have to
GPT? It's just, you know, the whole thing about getting my hopes up of like, oh, this doctor will be able to tell me. And they go, nah, I couldn't tell you for sure. It sounds like it is. So just give it a couple of weeks. And I hate the give it a couple of weeks. And if it's still messing with you, come back. It's just like, you made me waste 2 weeks then. Yeah. But anyways, what's going on with you?
Well, I was telling you earlier today that I felt like my diastasis recta was separating. Because mm-hmm. that's the thing. I know last week, and we're going to touch on it today as well. So this is how we should be treating our body as a temple, how our bodies are temples. Mm-hmm. And I was saying how to not do it for like the appearance, to not do it for vanity, but to do it because you genuinely just want to grow and be better and improve. But it is hard. It's easier said than done for sure. Like today I was looking at myself in the mirror and I'm like, I swear my diastasis recta is getting worse. Like this does not look good.
Yeah.
And maybe I need to like show a picture or something because it's just like extra skin, which I'm assuming is my big old bellies from pregnancy. And then right in the middle of my abs, it goes way more deeper because again, there's an abdominal separation. And so every time I did research, I always said, like, be careful with certain exercises because you can make it worse. And it's kind of fear-mongering, like, you can make it worse. And so that's, like, been in the back of my head, like, that little fear. And so I did mat Pilates yesterday night. And there were some exercises that I'm like, oh, my goodness, this feels, like, doesn't feel safe. Like, I'm not confident in it, like, definitely new for me and kind of little pain. And I was like, I'm not going to be no chicken. Let me like just power through. But then I looked in the mirror today and I'm like, oh my gosh, I swear it looks more separated. And then I was just like in my head, did I make it worse? Can you make it that worse in one day? Like, how does this work? And it's kind of it kind of sucks not knowing like if it's getting better or not, especially visually. Like there's no way to tell. Mm-hmm. It's only like little measurements and stuff like that. And it very little measurements. Like, I don't even know how to measure that thing. And so thankfully today I had physical therapy. And so I talked to my physical therapist and she's amazing. Her name's Jessica. I doubt she watches, but just in case, her name's Jessica. And she asked me like, oh, do you have any concerns? And I told her, can I make it worse? Like she goes, yeah, you can make it worse. But she basically told me, as long as I'm bracing my belly, which we've been practicing a lot, like it should be okay. Like I have to be very conscious, which sucks because I can be doing like an RDL, which is, what's an RDL?
Russian deadlift.
Yeah, I can be doing that. And I think I've done it so many times that you kind of like forget to brace your core. Mm-hmm. And then you just catch yourself like, oh my goodness, like did I brace my core? Like, I don't remember. And it's just, especially now in the beginning of my workout journey. But she measured it. She did all the measurements and she said, it hasn't gotten worse. So my width, like how separated it is the same. But she said, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. It's not getting worse. But the length is, like it's healing that way, whatever that means. So that, she seemed really happy. Like she was she looked so happy. So I'm like, okay, like she's probably happy because she's seen results, which means like what she's assigning. I'm sure that's a good feeling as a physical therapist. Like, I want to make sure I'm assigning things or like helping her.
Yeah.
And so she seemed really happy. And then my pelvis, I guess, rotated during pregnancy, or she said it could be a couple things, but usually it's common during pregnancy. And she was super happy that like I went in there that same day, and she said, oh, well, it's a little off, but we did a couple workouts. And she's like, oh, it's gone. So I just keep doing these workouts, and she's like, you should be good. Mm-hmm. And so that is good. But I think it's just reminding myself that it's not, which is kind of like faith, right? It's like not by what we see, but it's by what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it could be frustrating though, because there'll be some days where I'm like, oh, my abs look good. Like I'm getting better. And then there's some days where it's not, and it's just like your mind playing tricks on you. So I just have to like keep pushing whether I see anything or not. I probably won't see anything, because the reality is she did say they probably won't fully, well, I shouldn't say probably, but like it might not fully close.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but.
But then it does go back to what you said last week, that it shouldn't be about what you look like. It's about your inner health.
Yeah,
how I longevity, feel. Longevity, how you feel, how you perform.
For sure. And I think I just, you know how you like data?
Mm-hmm.
I just wish I could like, and I guess with my workouts, right? Like how many sets can I do? How strong mm-hmm. I feel? But that's so slow. And especially me, like my mind doesn't really work that way. Like I guess that's where I have to really buckle down and like do the data, because it's so hard. Like she, as soon as, so we did this workout where I have to like push against her thigh. So I'm laying down, right? And she's standing. So I have to push against her thigh as like hard as I can. Well, one leg, I'm like resisting her. I don't know, right? But again, it's for the pelvic thing. And just from the first one, she's like, oh, you're stronger already. And I'm just like, how can you tell? I'm like, I can't tell. But just for like feeling, I'm like, it was a week ago that I did this. Like, how can you tell, you know? So I feel like in my head, I'm just like, I don't know.
She probably knows that you feed off of words of affirmation. No, but when it comes to working out, 100%, you can't say that you can't have data, especially for like the workouts where you're doing repetitions or weight. It's like,
yeah, that's
it's true. A matter of if you're lazy to do it or if you're not lazy to do it. If you're not lazy to do it, because I have a chart and you don't even need like an Excel sheet. You can just put it on your notes.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is that you have to make sure that you're doing the same workout like
every time,
right? And so you'll be able to tell that you're progressing either by how many reps you're doing. So let's say like you do, how many sets do you do? 3 sets?
Yeah.
So let's say in the total of sets last week, you did 24 repetitions total, 8 times each one. And then this week you did 9 times each time, that came up to 27. Well, that's progress right there. And then also what I do, because I do it in the notes and on Excel, I'll put on the notes like, oh, today felt really hard. Let's keep it at this next time and do 1 extra rep. And that 1 extra rep is already progress. Like if you can bust that 1 rep out, that's progress.
Yeah.
Or if this week you're like, okay, last week was too light. I'm going to up it by like 10 pounds or 5 pounds or whatever. Then boom, like that's progress as well.
Yeah.
So like you can't say that working out, you can't see the progress.
Yeah. I guess like because I do strength training once a week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very different than like Pilates. It's about like feeling, right? Like, especially the change, the workouts every time. But that's what I do like about running, is that you got me on like the little Strava app, and you can see like, okay, how fast I'm going,
mm-hmm.
how am I feeling, right? And then trying to go like the long miles. Like I feel like it's super cool to be able to see that data in a week and how it changes like week to week.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for so many of us, and part of why for me the data is so difficult is because it becomes like an afterthought. And that's something that we're talking about. Like our body is the temple. And so it matters that all last week, that episode was like, it matters. But so many people think of their body as an afterthought. Like they decide, I have to go to work. And then they like relax, like everything, their day. And then it's not until like maybe a thought comes up, like, oh, I should go to the gym. But if they don't make it a habit, it's not something they're going to practice.
Mm-hmm.
But why do you think our bodies, it's so easy to make it an afterthought?
Because it takes hard work. I think the thing that we read in that book, James Clear. What's the name? Atomic Habits. It says that our brains will always want to do the easiest thing, not the hardest thing. It'll always shy away from doing the hardest thing. Working out is hard.
Yeah.
Lifting weights. Like in the time that I've been not running and I've been lifting weights more, I was telling a friend today, I know that lifting weights is not my thing. Like that's not my like, I've never really fallen in love with lifting weights.
Yeah.
No. I like what it produces, like the more toned body.
Yeah, I like it too. Like, still fall in love with it.
But I have not fallen. The way that I fell in love with running is not the way that I have fallen in love with work, like lifting weights. And so just lifting weights has been like a challenge to me because I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to do it. So I've been doing Monday lifting weight. Tuesday, some sort of cardio, whether it's virtual reality boxing or today I did biking. Then Wednesday, it's working out again. And what my plan has been is Monday weights, Wednesday weights, Friday weights, and even sometimes Sunday weights. Because I'm like, I don't lift weights that much when I'm just running. Yeah. I lift weights maybe once or twice a week. The plan is twice. And so the point is that lifting weights is hard, and so it takes more of a discipline, more of a push, more of an self-encouragement for me to be like, no, just go. Like, yeah. You have to go. And my thing is, like, if you don't go, you're not going to burn calories. And if you don't burn the calories, then you're not going to be able to eat even the way that, like, your diet suggests. I need to eat even less than that. Mm. So that's maybe I won't even get to enjoy my full, like, protein shake.
Yeah.
Because my protein shake is delicious. If you guys want the recipe, it's 8 ounces of almond milk. It's 1 tablespoon exactly of peanut butter. It's 1 tablespoon of honey. It's 1.5 scoops of protein, 1 scoop of collagen, and a banana. Mm. You blend that mess together and it's delicious. To me, it feels like cheating because it's so sweet. It's so good. But it's healthy for you.
Yeah.
Especially after a workout. But when I don't work out, I'm like, I'm not going to be able to drink that. And I'm just going to have almond milk with the protein powder. And it doesn't taste as good. And then I'm left, like my brain, like I think my brain gets the dopamine hit from my regular protein shake. Where it's just like, oh, like I took the edge off. Like I'm good. Like I don't need any like other bad food or whatever. But yeah, weightlifting is, it's hard. And so most people... And with running, most people, why they think that it's harder than they don't want to run. Everyone goes, I never saw myself as running. Yeah. But it's because they don't know the discipline of running, which is 80% of your runs should be a slow run. And I think your mentality changed when you went from, I'm just going to run however I run, which when people run without any sort of gauge, any sort of like pacer or nothing, like if you don't run with that, then you typically run faster than you should. And that's when you're like, I'm dying. I can't breathe. Like I'm getting like, I don't know how to say it.
The air.
Yeah. Like on your sides, like it really like it's poking your ribs or whatever.
Yeah.
And people go like, this does not feel good. I don't want to do it. But if you were to do your run in zone 2, which is a very slow run, that's when most people go, oh, I could do this forever. This isn't bad at all. Mm-hmm. And then you notice how much calories you burn within the time. And you're just like, this is a great workout. So to chalk up the answer, people have an afterthought about working out because it's hard work for the most part. And people need to find either an activity or a way for it to be more enjoyable.
And not only, I think is obviously it is hard work, but I think like, if your body's already working good, like they're not thinking about it, right? Like, oh, I can get out of bed and it doesn't hurt. I'm walking and I'm doing this and it doesn't hurt. So it's not like a pressing need where you're thinking about it.
I think if people were to do an actual self-analysis, they would see they were not as good as they thought they were. And the reason why I say is like the same way that we talk about 1% better every day.
Yeah.
Those people that are not doing things are getting gradually 1%
worse
every single day. And so that 1%, they don't even notice it.
Yeah, for sure.
Until like time goes by and they're like, why do I keep getting tired at 1 p.m.? Like, why after, like, my lunch, I get, like, I feel gross and disgusting and I feel tired and I'm dreading going home and spending time with my family because I don't have the energy or I'm wiped out. Like, if people were to do a true analysis of how do you feel during the day, doing it, like, hour by hour or every half hour by half hour, I guarantee you they would look at it and be like, yeah, I'm not so good as I thought I was.
Oh, for sure.
And it's because their health is an afterthought.
Yeah.
So they're just like, oh, this is everyday life because they've been getting 1% worse every single day. So they haven't noticed the huge change. But if they were to have recorded, let's say a year ago compared to now, guarantee you they would see the big change.
Yeah. But what I'm saying, the reason why it's an afterthought is because, like, it's working. The engine's working. The car's working.
They're alive is basically what you're saying. That's it.
No, because it's like, I think when, for example, when I, right now my car got a flat tire, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, it's working, it's working. I think I even saw the little sign and you could be like, oh, it's working, it's working. Not until you're like noticing a difference or you're like, okay, maybe this might be dangerous. Where you're like, I really need to like tackle this. Like I need to do something about it, right? And so I think that's the reality. And unfortunately, when so many people get sick or get diseases or something, that becomes all they can think about. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the priority because they get up and like it's hard to breathe. Or whether they lost a limb or something, right? I don't, like, I obviously don't know how that feels, but I'm certain if something drastic like that happened, they're gonna think about it throughout their day way more than someone who's not. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why health becomes an afterthought because they said it's so slow, the difference, the worsening, that it's not impacting or affecting their lifestyle in any way. And so it just is easy to put it on the back burner. It's easy. It's easy. But it's like that frog that's boiling in hot water where they don't notice until it's too late. They get that doctor note.
Wait, you don't think the crab notices that it's boiling?
No, there's a frog that the frog doesn't notice.
Oh.
They're getting boiled.
Really?
In hot water. Yeah, it's a thing that they don't notice until it's too late.
Hmm.
And I think that's unfortunate. And there's this like chart. I was like trying to look it up and I found it. One of my college professors showed me, and I honestly don't even remember like for what class or anything, but I think it's so important because it says, and maybe I'll send it to you so you can put it up. Because it says like crisis, that's important and urgent. And so there's, it's a 4 boxes and that's going to be on thing, right? So when there's a crisis, a mental health crisis, again, we're going to flag it as our brain, important, urgent, we're going to take care of that, like, immediately. Same thing with interruptions. But interruptions, they're not important, but they're urgent, right? Let's say I'm on a Zoom chat with my coworker, my kid enters the room, it's not really important, but it's urgent, it's an interruption, so I'm going to take care of it right then and there.
Okay.
So those are the two categories, crisis and interruptions, that we focus. We're most likely going to take care of it right then and there, right? One of them is not important, one of them is. Does that make sense? On the other side of the quadrant, you have things that are non-urgent. So one thing that's important but non-urgent is like your goals and planning. So think about like finances, right? Or getting out of debt. That is not urgent, but it's super important. And so usually a majority of people, they're really bad at that because again, it's not urgent. It's not like requiring you, hey, you need to get out of debt right now. Like something's gonna happen right now. But everyone would say like, yeah, that is pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
So people can put that in the back burner. And the other one, same thing, it's distractions. They're not important and non-urgent. And I feel like health, I think the reason why people see it as an afterthought is because it is super important, but it's like not urgent from like death to life right now. That goes into the goals and planning. Does that make sense? But just like if you don't do your will or if you don't get out of debt or if you don't take care of your health, it will catch up to you and it will become a crisis if you don't take care of it.
Right.
Where you will have to face it head on. But at that point, it is so urgent, so important that like it's like a life or death situation. It's so extreme where you always be like, I regret not taking care of this before. Like it becomes a regret. It becomes very, what is it, reactive instead of proactive. And so it's so hard to do, take our goals and our dreams and put it in the front when we have so many things to do. We're going to have so many distractions, so many interruptions in our daily life that it's going to make it hard, but it is so, so important. What do you say?
100%. And I wish people would make it an urgent thing. And I think that's why, like, whenever I have conversations about this, I always try to, like, get them to focus on certain things. Like, the responsibility, especially with the ones who are parents. I'm like, dude, like, you're responsible.
Yeah.
Like, just like you were talking last week about, you know, because your mom went through it and you had some certain thoughts of, like, could she have made different choices?
Yeah.
The same thing, like, us as parents have the responsibility, not just for ourselves, but for our spouses. Like, I'm sure your spouse wants you to live as long as you should be living.
Yeah.
Same thing with your kids, for sure. Like, your kids need you for a long time, whether they want to say it or not.
Yeah.
They're going to need your guidance. They're going to need your wisdom. They're going to need your coaching. And it's your responsibility to make it to where you should be making it.
Yeah.
And so I try to, I guess, put them in a more higher category, like maybe urgent of, like, you need to take care of this right now. And that's why, like, we have Irvin, you know, like that we made, like, the brand ambassador, shout out to Irvin, of, like, he just recently had a child. And that's what kind of, like, made him think, like, oh man, like, I'm up there in age. I just had a baby. And when this baby is, like, 15 and wants to run around, like, I'm going to be old. Mm-hmm. Not only am I going to be old, but if I keep going on with the habits that I have, like, I'm not going to be physically active to be able to hang with this kid. Like, who's going to hang with this kid? Mm-hmm. And so I believe that he took on that responsibility of, like, no, I need to take matters into my hand right now and start making the right choices where I can have that energy and that longevity for my kids.
Yeah. I believe it comes down to self-awareness, because it, and the atomic habits, that's why I think it's so important, because it makes you write down everything you do. Mm-hmm. And maybe people would come to realize, like, wow, I spend most of my day just taking care of interruptions and distractions, which again is the not important category.
Yeah.
Like, I am cleaning the house, which it's a distraction, but is that going to matter in the grand scheme of life? If, like, you didn't attend to a dirty home right then and there, would that have changed anything in the future? It's like, no, it's like, it's a distraction. You need, and I do think it's important. It's good for your mental health. But, like, so many, especially I'm, like, talking to, like, the stay-at-home moms or just, like, women in general, like, they're like, oh, I never have time to take care of myself. I'm taking care of the house, right? Or another one is, like, emails, like, your work, which, yeah, your work is important. That's your time of income. But, like, if you didn't take care of that email right then and then, most of our jobs, like, most of us are not, I don't know who's watching the Better Everyday podcast, but we're not doctors that if we don't respond to that, it's like a life-threatening emergency.
Yeah.
Like, again, it becomes interruptions and distractions. But if we write down, like, what are we focusing on? Are we just focusing? Do we want to live our day-to-day just focusing on handling these interruptions or distractions? Or are we doing goals and planning so that we're ahead of it and they're not going to turn into crisis because we waited until last minute until it was too late? And I think I definitely was living day to day, just like my to-do list for my, whether it's ministry or whether it's for my work or my house, but it's like day to day where in the grand scheme of things, it's not going to matter. It was interruptions. It was distractions. What I have to take care of right now. And I think things that matter, like journaling, your prayer life, those are, again, people usually don't do them because it's like, you don't have to take care of it then and there. No one's pressing you and it's not urgent. You don't have to handle it. No one's going to be on you saying, like, hey, you missed a deadline. But all of that with working out, that is going to give you the most long, fulfilled life. But because it's not like a deadline, someone's like, hey, you need to do this right before this. I feel like it's so much easier to let it go and lose track of it.
If you guys haven't heard us speak about it before, we're big advocates of the book Atomic Habits.
Yeah.
There's a part in that book that kind of asks you, who do you want to be?
Yeah.
And then it asks you to list every single action that you take during your 24 hours, every single action. And then once you write everything down, even the most menial things, like I got out of bed, I brushed my teeth, I washed the dishes, I made lunch, whatever, write everything down. And then after every single action that you do, you put a plus one if it is helping you become who you say you want to become. Write a minus one if it's going against who you want to become. Mm. And then a zero if it's something like that doesn't matter, right? So that's what Grace is kind of talking about. how there's certain things that we need to focus on. And I want to get to this question that I have for you. And I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I would like you to answer it, which is, because you're talking about there's emails that we don't, I mean, work is important, but it's not that important.
Yeah.
Like always 24/7 making sure that the house is spotless is important, but it's not that important. So you're talking about this list, and I'm going to ask you, if someone were to read Atomic Habits right now, and they might be wondering, what is Grace's opinion or what is David's opinion? What's a Better Everyday Podcast opinion on what should be my top five priorities to get right in my life first? What would they be?
Like to add on to their list of like...
No, not add on. What should be the top five priorities that I need to make sure that I have locked down before I start worrying about those emails, before I start worrying about like, oh my gosh, is every single dish done? Oh, there's a little spot of dust there. Like, what should be your top five priorities? Who should be...
Yeah. In your life.
Yeah, in your life. What should... Yeah.
Like what five things should you do in your day before you handle that email, right?
No.
Let me answer it and then you tell me if I got it right or not. All right. So like, I think for me, what's become top priority is like reading and praying.
Okay, so spiritual.
Right? So it's like, don't start off your day without that.
Okay, I think that's, spiritual, number one, go.
Yeah. Good night's sleep.
Okay, so part of health.
Yeah, like you should prioritize that in your day.
Mm-hmm.
I would say working out.
Okay, still part of health.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd say like telling your loved ones that you love them.
Okay, so connections and relationships?
Yeah. Is that three?
That's three.
Eating well.
Health. Then would you say three? Top three? Like it doesn't matter if it doesn't have to be five. I just said five for the sake of it.
I think for sure spiritual.
Should be the top three.
Yeah, spiritual, health.
Those are the things that are going to give you longevity. Those are the things that are going to give you purpose. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that are going to give you fulfillment. Those are the things that God has called upon.
Yeah.
And is there anything else that you can think of?
No, not that I can think of. How about you?
I would agree. Spiritual, especially for the men, make sure. And actually, you sent something today, which is very interesting, but we won't get that into it. But
we should
talk
about it, yeah.
Being a spiritual leader, making sure that you have some sort of relationship with God. Now, if your wife went to school for theology and stuff, just like it's kind of hard to think like, oh, I'm going to be able to match her on the whole theology thing. But do you have a relationship with God? Are you reading the word? Are you praying? Are you meditating? Are you having moments of silence where you are leaving a space for God to speak in your life? Are you doing these things? That's spiritual.
Yeah.
Health, 100%. Your nutrition, your activity, 100%, you lose 100%. Well, you lose the muscle that you do not use. And when you're older, you're going to need that muscle because that is the difference between can you get out of bed by yourself or will you need help to get out of bed? Simple as that. The sleep, 100%, it could give you longevity or it could take away years off your life if you're not sleeping properly. Managing stress. And that's not to mean that you need to run away from stress, but having controlled stress is good because then you start expanding. There's a part of your brain that needs to expand with present stress for you to be able to handle what life is going to throw at you.
Be resilient.
Yes. And then what was the third one that you said?
The relationships.
Yes, relationships. For me personally, it's family for sure. And that's a topic that I was talking about with a friend today of how precious it is the time that you have with your young children, that it's going to come to a point where they're 13, 14 years old, and they're not going to want to hang out with you. And you're going to wish again that they could be 7 years old again so you could spend time with them and have laughs with them.
Yeah.
So cherishing those connections with family.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I would agree with those three things. Get those things down first, and then you start doing like the subcategories, you could say, you know, being more disciplined in all areas of your life, being more organized, being able to learn how to say no, being able to keep your house in order, But I think your three priorities, your foundation, are those three things.
Yeah. And again, don't feel like you need to do all those three in like one day. Like it might take like baby steps, but as long as you're progressing and adding little by little, then it could be overwhelming. But going back to our temple, I do think self-care has been talked about so much recently and been pushed out. I don't know if it's because my For You page, you know how your For You page starts being catered to like what you start liking and stuff. So I could be wrong. And I'd love to know your guys' opinion and feel free to put it in the comments or reach out. Because I thought like at one point self-care was just about like reading a good book, which could be, right? Like taking a bath, reading a good book, getting a massage are all good things. Going shopping, getting a little coffee, a little drinky drink. Getting your nails done, those things, which I do think you do need mental health days and mental self-care. But I think now, again, I think my For You page is like filled with runners. So I don't know. And I didn't like ask for it. It was just things I've guess been drawn to. Do you think it has been swung where now people are seeing self-care as like good stewardship of their bodies and health? Do you think it's not there yet? It's just maybe like where we find ourselves.
I think it's where we find ourselves. And that's, I believe, one of the reasons why President Donald Trump put that Robert F. Kennedy as like the head of like health or something like that.
Yeah.
I forgot what his exact title is, but his whole thing is, you know, go against the, like the, not the doctors, but the
big pharma,
go after like the FDA, go after like certain foods, whatever, because in all reality, like I've said this before, and if you guys haven't watched that episode, the progress and the innovation of America is always, how do we make things easier for people? Easier, a lot of times, is not better. Because easier means, we went from like home-cooked meals to now fast food. Now fast food to, you don't even have to get it into your car to go get fast food. Now you can get it ordered to like
dropped off
to you. So the most that you have to do is go from your couch to the front door and get it. Like, so all that is working negatively towards and people think easier is better. And it's going to take a radical movement for the majority of, especially the Western hemispheres, Western North American area, for the majority of people to go like, let's take our health into consideration again.
Yeah.
And I don't know the details, but I do see this one picture many times where it says like back in 1960, whatever, this is what the majority of people looked like. Here's what the school programs looked like. And it was like so much physical education. Whereas now physical education is getting like more and more of just like an optional thing. Like it's not even, hey, it's a must. And before it was like, at least in Canada, I think grade 10 or 11, it became an option to do physical education. But before that, it was like mandatory. You had to do physical education.
Yeah.
And now I feel like it's like even in middle school where it's an option, like, yeah, you don't have to do it anymore. Like you go do something else. And so the point is, there are more people, and it's the whole principle of who's that guy? He's a very big motivational speaker. He's very big, very big head. Oh man, I forgot what his name is, but when I remember his name, it'll pop up here. But he said, close your eyes, think of a car or think of a color or whatever, and open your eyes. And the moment that you open your eyes, you start noticing every single thing that you said that color of.
Yeah.
And it's happening to us where I got into running, you into running, and now your social media is just like, I don't know if they listen to us or like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like they are connected to our emails and stuff, because sometimes it's an email, then all of a sudden I start getting like these ads on Instagram. And I'm like, I did not search this on Instagram at all. But anyways, that we start It's the whole principle of if you want to become a healthy person, surround yourself by healthy people, right? So now our social media is surrounded by running stuff, health stuff. And so that I can understand how you feel like, oh, like the tide is starting to turn. But when I look at the majority of
people in real life,
not in social media, like where we're not being fed these things, I'm like, no, this is like an epidemic, yo. Like it's bad.
And so I would love to see self-care be seen as good stewardship of our bodies. I think self-care, again, goes to like the fun treats stuff where it's like, that's nice. I'm not saying stop doing that, but that shouldn't be the priority.
I mean, self-care sometimes is, let me open up this tub of ice cream and go ham on it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, self-care. I'm sorry, no. That's not self-care.
So you think it should be self-stewardship?
Yes, 100%. And the thing is, because so many people are wired for that dopamine hit where they go, oh, this feels so good. And in turn, my life is going to be so much better because I feel good.
Yeah.
And it's like, did you know? And it almost kind of, I don't know if this is like, it's almost kind of, like the story of the woman at the well, where Jesus is like, you've been drinking out of so many wells, homegirl, like, and your thirst never gets quenched. Mm. I have the rivers of living water. If you were to drink from my well, you'd never go thirsty again. Yeah. And so kind of like similar principle where, oh, let me get this dopamine hit from this ice cream. But then it's going to give you a hard crash. And then guess what? You're going to be craving that dopamine hit again from that ice cream or from a burger or from whatever, where you're going to constantly be doing that, but it's negatively affecting you. Mm. Whereas if you were to do the quote unquote hard work in the beginning and you get to a point of health, like I am a true testament of, I have never had so much energy during the day. Whereas I used to crash like around 1 PM. Now I don't feel like I start crashing until like 8 p.m. where I'm like, oh yeah, my body knows it's about to be bedtime. Mm-hmm. And that could just be your rhythm of life, right?
Yeah.
But it's like you said, self-stewardship should be self-care, because that is truly what's going to give you energy. It's truly what's going to make you feel better, not only just physically, but also mentally, because you are doing harder things that you once we're not doing. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, are also carving an identity for yourself of, this is who I am. Like, there's so many benefits from you taking care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope I could start like, and I'm pretty positive, because sometimes I don't even believe myself. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna start working out, or I'm gonna start doing this. And then I say it, I start doing it, and I'm like, I don't see how this is sustainable. Like, I don't see how I can like continue or like be part of my lifestyle. But this time around feels different. So I hope, and I think, again, I am being held accountable not only by my husband, but by the Better Everyday podcast, by my physical therapist. But I'm, like, enjoying it too. Like, even if no one were telling me, I'm like, hey, I'm, like, putting it on me, because I like that feeling of, like, moving my body, that feeling of I'm accomplishing the dopamine hit. And so I hope that in my mind, it's already like starting to reframe, or has been reframing, of self-care is me stewarding good my body.
Mm-hmm.
Where even now, like I went on the retreat this past weekend, Palm Springs, and I could have easily said like, this is my time to relax. This is my time to unplug. This is my time to like do whatever it is I want, and I want to sleep in.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt good to run. Like, it felt good to wake up and run. Like, that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I'd have to remind myself, like, when you are fighting against your mind or against your flesh, it's like, remember when you did it, like, how great you felt. Like, you're going to feel that again. Might not seem like it right now because you might be tired or lazy or whatever it is, but, like, you will feel that. And so now I'm thinking of, like, oh, my goodness, all the vacations we took that we didn't run. Like, I'm like, Puerto Rico, there was so much great.
Yeah, like, we could have run
running
there.
Paths. And then I think about Mexico. Remember how we had, like, the little, like, the vineyard, like, route? And I'm like, oh, we could have run there. Like, I'm just, like, thinking of all the places, like, we could have run, but we didn't because I wasn't a runner. And so I'm like, I start getting excited. Like, okay, hopefully we have our, I don't know if we're going to have our anniversary trip, but if we do, or at the cruise, I like showed you a video of this woman like running around. And I'm getting excited for it. Like, I'm looking forward to it. And I think as a society, we need to reframe that that's what true self-care is. It's taking care of ourselves in a way that it's going to matter, in a way that there's going to be growth. Because I can get my nails done and it might make me feel confident, but as soon as my nails come off, I lose my confidence. It doesn't sustain, how you said, it doesn't last.
Yeah.
I'm going to be thirsty once again. I'm going to need to go back. And when you work out, like, no one can take that away from you. And it, that, how you say that, like, adds to your life. That adds value to your life.
Yeah.
And so I do challenge you guys to think of that next time you want to practice self-care. Try to practice self-care in a way maybe you wouldn't have before, whether that's sleeping well, whether that's fueling your body well, whether that's working out, whatever that looks like. Like, let's try to change what self-care means to a lot of people.
And I would also say, I mean, we've talked about it before. People have excuses. And most of the time they sound like very valid excuses. I have three kids. I have a newborn. I have this job. I have this wife. I have whatever. This situation, that situation. Anything and everything. It all sounds valid. One of the worst things that you guys can do, and I've learned this in like couples therapy, I've learned this in personal therapy, I've learned this in working out. If you do not embrace the actual process, don't even start. Don't start, because you're going to be like how I used to be, where I would start, last about 3 months, and then quit. And then you fall back even harder. And then you get some sort of motivation. You saw a certain movie, you saw a certain video clip, and then you get motivated again. And then it lasts 3 months and you quit. You need to have a good focus on your why.
Yeah.
Like, if these things that we're talking about do not jive with you, then they don't jive with you. I would argue with you if you were in front of me of why they should jive with you. The longevity part, the family part, the responsibility of being there for your loved ones, for the purpose that God has placed over your life. Like, all these things I could argue all day about. And they should jive with you, but if they don't, they don't. So don't listen to this and be like, oh, I just got motivated. There's a fire. And then it's not really about like you actually flipping the switch, or it's not really about like, oh, I have like a focused why. Like, because then you're just going to end up quitting. And then you're going to have all these excuses of why you quit, and they're all going to sound right. And that's where I come in with, you get in what you, well, you get out what you put in. Like, the reason why you're doing it, that's a motivation. I think I drive off of the longevity part. I drive off of the family part. I drive off of competition with myself and with other people. I drive off of low key competition with my son. Like, I know he's going to be like 16 one day, and he's going to be like, I'm going to smoke you in a foot race. I'll be like, I bet you need to be 21 to smoke me in a foot race, because at 16, you're not going to smoke this dude. So those things motivate me. And the funny thing is, a couple of people have sent me this one meme of Michael Jordan, where it's part of his documentary, but it's this one little clip where he's like, the caption says something like, there was one of running. I went on for a long run with my friends, and it was supposed to be an easy run, and they picked up the pace. And then Michael Jordan goes, that's all I needed. That's all I needed. And it became personal. And I feel like that's
you.
That's me 100%, where it's just like this chip on my shoulder, this edge where I'm like, and it fuels me. And like, when there's no competition, then it's the whole like seeing the data and seeing the progress that fuels me like crazy. That keeps me homed in. That keeps me disciplined with my nutrition and all that stuff. Like, but it's so important for you to get that, the health thing going. But Yes. You need your why. If you don't have a why, then don't start. Get your why first. But honestly, longevity. Longevity. Like, picture yourself not even at 80, at 60, 65. Mm-hmm. And you're getting out of bed. And you see your friend, 65-year-old, that's always been active, just like, hey, man, so what are we going to do? We're going to play basketball today? And you're just like, what the heck? I can barely move. Mm-hmm. I have a bad hip. I have a bad knee. I have this or that. Like, which one do you want to be?
I think people have whys. I don't think, like, that's the issue. I see it as you were talking right now. Because, again, we went on a Palm Springs retreat and you see the, so they're called the tumbleweeds, where you just see like them cross across the road. Mm-hmm. And I was seeing that, like someone starting and then something happens and whoosh, they're just being blown, right? Like whether it be an inconvenience in their life, whether it be another friend, whether it be their bad habits, like they started and then something just kind of like quickly takes them off the path and they're just like going, falling, right? And it's, they haven't created like these huge roots. And again, I think a why can be a root. Mm-hmm. You need, it's, it goes back to like what Atomic Habits says, what we've been talking about, like your identity. Because I do thrive like you off competition and stuff, but there's times where it didn't stick with me. Like I am a competitive person. I feel like I am stubborn and like it, for some reason it didn't stick with me. Like this time around, the reason why I think it stuck with me because I was like, no, I'm a person now that if I say something, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't like that. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, I'm a person who has been consistent. I'm a person who's only getting better. But I like built it. Like I had to build that because I could have said that before and that was not me before. Like I would have said it and I would have cringed like, no, that's who I want to be. But now I'm like, no. I'm just going to start doing this because this is who I am. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting as we were to tie it back to the temple and we started reading the book of John in that first chapter, this is how important like the word is, right? Like the beginning was the word. The word was with God. It talks about how like Jesus is the word, but we all know that through the word, everything was created, right? Like in the beginning, God said, let there be lights, and there was light. And how many people, and especially if you are a believer, like how many people like talk bad about their temple, like just put themselves down of like, I can't do this. I am weak. I'm going to give up. I'm not good at running. Like they just, I think they believe a bad version of themselves, which is sad because God created our human bodies and called it good. But it's so hard for us to love ourselves. It's so hard for us to like find a positive identity. It's so easy to have those identities that I'm not good at this. Mm-hmm. I'm bad at this. I can never do that. And there's this question that I wanted to ask. Well, there's two questions and I'll ask you and then you can answer. It's like I want people, right, to be like, would I treat God's house the way I treat my own body? I think that's so important because I think people go to church and they're not going to go in there and vandalize it. They're not going to go in there and mess it up. But it's like, why are you doing that to your temple where that's where the Holy Spirit resides? But this one is, what if the way we care for or neglect our bodies is actually one of the clearest signs of how we see God and how we see ourselves? Because we know that God created us. We know that he called it good. We know that he loves us. But what is that, like, missing piece?
Say that last question again.
What if the way we care for or neglect our bodies is actually one of the clear signs of how we see God and how we see ourselves?
Hmm. Oh, man, that's a tough question. What if, I think, I think people lose sight of our body being a temple. I think, like, some people forget, or no, don't forget, they're not mindful. It's not even a thought that crosses their mind of, I should read my Bible today, or I should pray. In the same way, people aren't constantly thinking about, this is the temple of God. The Holy Spirit resides in me. Like, they, I feel like for the most part, they have lost touch with that. And I think because they've lost touch with that, they have fallen into addiction. Now, you had a conversation with me a couple of days ago in regards to addiction. And it made me start thinking, like, how many people are addicted to the food that we eat? Now, probably most people might not like that. But the question would be, if you had to quit, could you quit? And I feel like most people would really fight back. And they would call that really radical. They would be like, we need to have some sort of balance, which balance has been misconstrued so much lately. Mm. God called us to enjoy life. And so they people fight so hard for their comfortability and for their dopamine hits. They fight so hard.
Yeah.
And it always makes me think of that one verse that goes, the path is wide. Many people travel down it, but that path leads to death. And the path is narrow. Not many people travel through it. And that one leads to life. And it's like the harder path will lead to life. Mm-hmm. The thing that you keep fighting against is probably the thing that you should do.
Yeah.
And so I feel like there's been a disconnect of, like, this is not a godly thing. This is a earth thing. This is a, I'm enjoying myself here on earth thing. I would even go as far as people thinking, like, well, if there's ice cream, that means God meant for there to be ice cream. I need to enjoy that ice cream. If there's this fast food, God let that happen. I must be able to enjoy that fast food. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that people are really thinking about that. And I guess if you want to connect it, then they aren't really thinking about it. Then what do they really think about God? They're probably thinking, like, oh, he's more interested in the spiritual than the physical. Mm. He's more interested in my heart than the physical. The physical, I would say most people go, Christians, spiritual, emotional, physical, like on those levels.
Which is crazy because Jesus became flesh. Or Jesus is.
I think human. If people were to rank it, they would not rank all three on the same level. They would rank it bam, bam, bam. And people might be like, well, we're going to die eventually. Our flesh is going back to the ground. Big whoop. So I don't think people honor the privilege and the opportunity that they've been given.
And there's obviously people who, like, on the other side of that spectrum, right, where they do work out and they're doing all these things and they're probably not even believers or anything, where it's just like, okay, that is also kind of a waste because your body will die and you have a soul and what happens to your soul. Mm-hmm. But I think we are called to be good stewards of everything that God gave us. And like I said, all those three categories. And I think, I don't know, like reading that question, our bodies is actually one, what if our bodies is one of the clearest signs of how we see God and how we see ourselves? I think how you said, like, we don't think about it, but we've become like so emotionally driven that we can't even think about God, about how he operates, about what he's done, because we're so focused on how do I feel, how do I need to feel good in this moment, what do I want right now, mm-hmm. that it takes so much time and just effort to think about, wait, like to dive to our feelings and be like, wait, I have to think about God, I have to pray to him, I have to look at his word, I have to think, what does he want for me? Like, it takes a lot for people to think that. It doesn't come and like, and it doesn't come, right? We babies are born and it's like, me, mine. We have to like teach empathy. We have to teach that. But I'd hope that as we grow in a relationship with God, just like in the beginning of our marriage, I was very selfish. I think we both were very selfish. Mm-hmm. And it's not until we go to therapy, we work on a relationship, we're more years married, where I'm becoming less and less selfish. And yeah, there's still parts of me that are selfish. I have to catch myself. You have to call me out. But I'm less selfish than I was before. And I hope that as you start your journey with God, it doesn't become an afterthought of like, wait, what does God want from my body, from me, from every aspect of my life? But I see it as, and I think I've heard this somewhere, I just don't know, or maybe it's an original thought, I doubt it. But when it's like, God made us in that way, if God gave us a Lamborghini, a Maserati, like a car, and he's like, hey, I'm giving this to you, I'm lending it to you, this is good, I love this, please take care of it. We wouldn't go like in the freeway, how fast can we ride this? Let's start drifting or like not putting fuel in it. Like we're going to probably like take good care of it, be prepared to put gas, make sure that it comes back. It's all like, but we do that to our bodies. Like we know it's good. We know we're God's beloved. We know it, but for some reason it doesn't translate in how we act. Mm-hmm. So it's like, do we really know it? Are we really believing that he loves us and he made us good and he values us and it's important to him? But there's like a disconnect.
I think what's lacking, going off of what you were saying about identity, people have weak identities nowadays. Mm. Like very, very weak identities. And the reason why I said that is because I've had a couple of conversations in the recent past. And these conversations have been there. I've come more into focus of there are foundational characteristics that will translate to every single part of your life. One of them being discipline. Mm-hmm. And I go off of your own story. You first began your discipline, was it?
With TikTok.
With TikTok. Then you said, gosh, I can be consistent. I can be disciplined. I can stick to what I said I was going to do. Then you went to the spiritual. I can journal every day. I can wake up at 5 a.m. and do this every day. Mm-hmm. I can wake up at 5 a.m. and read the word every day, journal, and then write in my prayer journal. I can do this. Now I can translate this into working out and being healthy, right? And so there are foundational characteristics.
Yeah.
And when I say foundational, like I truly mean foundation. And I'll go back to that Instagram of School of Hard Knocks when the guy interviews millionaires and he goes, have you ever been broke? Yes, I have. How did you get back? And they always go, I always knew I was going to get back to where I was before because I have the characteristics. Mm. There's a foundational characteristics where if you fall, if you fail, if you mess up in whatever way, you hit this foundation that you have built with Christ and you just, there is no more fear of I'm doomed. There's maybe a fear of like, oh man, like I messed up a little bit. But there's only so far you can fall when you have those foundational characteristics, which I would say is discipline, humility, love. There's probably more. But like there's certain, those things where just like, I'll be okay. And this will translate. And so building your identity off of that foundation, off of Christ, I don't know how people are going to take this, but I believe if you're truly disciplined, you're disciplined in all areas of your life. Mm. Maybe there's some areas of your life where you haven't gotten to it yet, right? Like let's say for you, you started with TikTok, then you went to the spiritual, then you went to the physical, right? And it was like one after the other, but you were like, let me start with this. Let me practice it. Got the rhythm. All right, cool. Next thing. Okay, let me start this. Start the rhythm. All right, I got this. Next thing, right? But I feel like if you are truly disciplined in one thing, you can be disciplined in all things, okay? And so that's why it is hard for me to believe that somebody is disciplined spiritually when they clearly have not been disciplined physically.
Say that again.
I cannot say that somebody is truly disciplined if they say I'm disciplined in the spiritual. Because again, we go back to the rankings. People have a ranking. Mm. And Christians have a ranking. The spiritual is the most important. Then it comes the emotional part, and then it's the physical part. So I say, like, if low key, if somebody is heavily obese or like overweight, but they say that they're spiritually disciplined, I would challenge that and be like, are you really spiritually disciplined? It's hard for me to believe that when what you are presenting is not discipline. And especially if you have a spiritual discipline, the one that people say, I have a spiritual discipline and I have a great relationship with God and I have a great connection with God and he's made me a strong and brave warrior.
Yeah.
That should be translated in all parts of your life. And if they are not, then again, I would challenge it.
Yeah.
So going back to the question, I do believe there are many weak identities out there, and there's a many fearful people of stepping into what they believe is an unknown of, I don't know if I can get this done. I don't know if I can build this character of discipline. I don't know if I can do these hard things. I don't know if I can be organized enough to make these hard things as easy as possible. I don't know if I really want to take the time to write down all my actions and to see if I'm really headed down the right path. I don't know if I want to take the time to read this book that will probably super benefit my life because I'm saying I'm not a reader. I'm not good at focusing. I'm whatever. Like, that to me is a weak identity.
Yeah.
And those are typically the people, and this is just my personal opinion, but those are typically the people that have every excuse in the book. And not only do they have all the excuses in the book, but they have songs that go along with them where they want people to feel so bad for them and to hold them. And like, I've been to therapy. I understand the whole feel your feelings and be vulnerable and have that moment to just let it out and then move forward.
Yeah.
But many people get stuck in that, let me sing the sad song. Let me tell you all the valid excuses of why I can't. I have this medical issue. I have these kids. I have this job. I have to work two jobs. There's so many valid excuses. But if I want to be like really harsh and radical, like, how are you going to feel when, if you had an interview with God or an angel or something that's like, all right, why don't you do all these things? And you gave them all these excuses and they were like, bruh, bruh. Like at that point, then I would go to your question of, by your actions, you're kind of stating who you believe God to be in your life.
Yeah. I do think if there's a greater, like an issue with self-control in any, right? Because I feel like people can hear your message, which is a powerful message. And I think there's so much truth to that. But be like, oh, he's just so insensitive. Like he must not struggle with anything.
We're in that culture right now. And that's why like I was kind of like hesitant to say it. But I mean, it has to be said, like the pendulum sooner or later is going to swing people.
Yeah.
It's going to swing. Like, I don't know if you want to explain this pendulum to people because you explained it to me. And I'm like, the first time that you told me that, it never went away from me. Now I truly believe it.
Yeah.
So the pendulum of like culture and society swings every so often. So like, we were in a whole machista thing. And now, right now in the culture that we're in, it's all about feelings and like giving space to the feelings and like, oh my gosh, like my past generations never did that.
Yeah.
And then guess what? The pendulum's going to swing back this way. And there's going to be a moment of like balance as it's swinging back. Like, oh my gosh, like everyone seems so healthy. And then all of a sudden, boom. And you kind of already see those outliers out there that are like, heavily, let's call them on the right side of like men this and men that and need to stand up and forget the women and blah, 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 blah. Like you're already seeing all those outliers. Sooner or later, the pendulum is going to full swing, like go full swing that way again, where it's going to be all these machistas and all this like hardcore opinions and nobody cares about your feelings. Like it's going to happen. It's what happens in history. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was just kind of like defending myself because you had said the whole thing, but
no, but I do. I think with Christ, I do think it is a balance of where God, Jesus never waters down the truth. He never lost the taste of salt or hid his light, but he always approached it with grace, like where he saw the person. He saw, right? So I feel like it's hard because I don't think you'll ever see a person and like tell them this to their face. Like it's easier to do it with a screen. But I think obviously when we see that person, like seeing their situation, approaching it with grace, but then saying the truth. And I think that's why maybe a lot of people struggle or find themselves in those situations where they feel hopeless, they feel like they've been running this cycle of like, I'm trying and they don't have those deep identities, so they get thrown by the wind because people have been offering a lot of grace and not that truth, that bold truth to like, hey, this is an issue. This is a big issue. And this is where you're lacking. This is where whatever, or vice versa, right? They just get all that and they don't get the grace part. And I think it's so important to bring it to both. But I do think as believers, like the way we talk about God, the way we know God to be, I do find it, how you say, very difficult to have the Holy Spirit and not practice self-control. Because that is, as the fruit of the Holy Spirit, we have that. And it's like, if that is not exercised or if that is not in our life, that fruit hasn't been grown to its full capacity, it's like then what? It's because we keep feeding our flesh and those weeds are choking the fruit. I do think there can be like both, right? Like you see healthy plants and then they're being choked by weeds. And so it's like, what are you, most of your day, most of your speech, most of your actions, is it planting those weeds or are you strengthening the spirit in you? Because the Bible clearly says that God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and self-control. And I do think if you find yourself like, why can't I get out of this cycle? Why can't I? How you said, like, in your spiritual life, like, what is missing? But also there might be something that you haven't healed. And you have this gaping wound. And the Holy Spirit is trying to go and heal it. But you're either covering it because you're too scared. You're putting a bandage over it. Like you haven't done true open heart surgery, they could be like chains that you yourself keep putting. Again, how you talk yourself, right? Like you're saying like, I know God freed me. I know I'm more than a conqueror. Oh my goodness. But I'm just that, like, you talk down to yourself and you put those chains on yourself. It could be so many different things, but I think our job as Christians is to say, who does God say I am? What does that look like? Write a list and make sure that our actions to the best of our ability reflect that. And if you need help, seek the help. Like, we can't be using that victim mentality as believers.
Yeah. Going back to the commentary by like what I said, I know who I am. And the reason why I say that is because, like, what I said was, I guess, kind of bold, right? And you,
but it's the truth.
You felt compelled to, like, trying to, like, let's sand it down a little bit.
Not,
you
know? Sand it, but say how I said that truth is necessary, but bringing with that grace.
Yes. But I think this is just, like, a public opinion, right? In no way, shape, or form would I ever shame anybody. No way, shape, or form would I, you know, like, talk down to somebody.
Yeah.
If anything, I'm the complete opposite, you know? I feel like a lot of people need to hear this to be able to have that self-reflection.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, some people might be off put by it. And I feel like some people are just always going to choose where they're at right now and they won't want to change. Okay. But there are some people that might hear this and go, man, like I need help or I want to do this. And any person like that really knows me, any person that comes up to me knows that I have a heart for the underdog. Like yeah. it just simply takes somebody saying, I need help. And I'm just like, I'm here for you 100%. And I kind of see myself kind of like a Dave Ramsey. Like you ever hear Dave Ramsey speak, like that dude is like bold. Like he makes some people feel yeah. and sound dumb. But the people that he makes feel and sound dumb, I see it similar to like Jesus. Like Jesus had his grace moments of like, to the lost and lonely, I'm here for you and I love you and I'm embracing you. But to the Pharisees, I'll throw down with you if you want, like not physically, but verbally, like, you know, and I feel like that's what Dave Ramsey does. Like the people that he makes feel dumb are the people that are trying to like verbally fight with him. Like I'm right. Like, or they're trying to find a way to like, tell me that I'm right. And he's just like, no, you are wrong. And some people need to hear that. Like, no, the way that you are doing things right now is wrong. You need to change it. And I fully agree. There's some people that might have wounds. There's some people that might have like whatever, like again, justified like excuses, right? But at the same time, you always tell me two things could be right at the same time.
For sure.
That they have these wounds, that they have these excuses that are legitimate, but that doesn't excuse you from making the right actions to be able to make it better. Right? The actions can be, let me see a therapist. Let me find a nutritionist. Let me like whatever. Let me get a coach. Let me get a trainer, like whatever. Let me get an accountability partner. But I'm not going to get stuck in this phase, because that's my other pet peeve. People who get stuck in like, let's just process and process and process and process, but we're never going to launch you. Like this, that we're stuck here. We're going to find a wound and then we're going to find the next wound and then we're going to find the next wound and then the next wound. And you're going to feel like you're just never going to heal. Mm-hmm. Like, no, like two things can be right. You can be healing at the same time and you can be taking the actions that are moving you forward. That's plain and simple.
You said something that made me think. I wonder if why Christians who lack self-control or who are not self-disciplined is because they have this pharisaical, I don't even know if I'm saying that right, mindset, where they go to church, they see people day to day. It's like, how are you doing? I'm good. God has made me more than a conqueror.
Mm-hmm.
I have the Holy Spirit. I am free. I'm no longer a slave to sin. Where the people that Jesus encountered were like, I need help. I am in like a death or life situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like I am in this cycle and I can't be broken. Like I'm going to that well. And I keep, like they're fed up, right? Like I keep needing to come and drink water. Or like if I could just touch Jesus, I will, like they're in that moment of like desperation. And we said it. And I feel like this could be another topic, like, because we're already kind of prolonging it. And I
asked. No, you're not doing a part three. Because then you're going to tell me I got to do three. Because
this is not just about the temple anymore.
Uh-huh.
Like, I feel like they need to get to that point. Like, trying to say how I can say this, like, fast enough. And, like, they need to get to that point of desperation. But because they're playing church, it's just enough to keep them enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this might sound, like, harsh. But your Sunday dose, it's like going to the doctor and saying, I'm healthy because I keep getting my vaccine, I keep getting my medicine. And that's what church is. Just enough for you to stop complaining. Just enough for you to keep coming week by week. Just enough. But the Christians haven't got to that point of desperation where it's like, this is not working. I am in dire need. They haven't like ripped off the bandaid and said, look, I am bleeding and I need Jesus. Like they haven't seen that true vulnerability because they keep faking it. And we've said, like, if you have shame or if you keep faking it, no miracle, no love, no, nothing can work. You're not even like Jesus, because it's a mask. Like Jesus himself said, I cannot perform miracles here. Like they do not believe in me. And yeah, we could say we believe him. we can keep doing it. But do you truly believe him? Because you would not be talking to yourself like that if you truly believe that Jesus sees you as his beloved.
Mm.
And so I wonder if religion has killed so much relationship, because that's just been enough to get them off the edge.
I think plain and simple, if you have encounters with God, if you have a relationship with God, there's a requirement for growth.
Yeah.
There is a requirement. There is no stagnation. There is none of that. There is a requirement for growth and for moving forward. And I'll always go back to the example of the disciples on the boat. The first time Jesus is on there, falls asleep. Oh my gosh, we're dying, we're dying, we're about to die. Jesus is like, yo, chill, relax, like, we're good. They're on the boat a little bit after that time. Jesus is not there. There's a storm. They're not freaking out. That's growth.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're walking with Jesus, it's a requirement for there to be growth. There's a requirement for there to be transformation. And if you're constantly on this hamster wheel of I'm hurt, I'm wounded, I have past traumas, I have all these things, it's never getting healed, I'm still working through it year after year after year after year, and you're running in the same place, you are going nowhere. So are you truly having a relationship with God?
Yeah.
That is a challenging question that I mean, for the sake of I've already been bold enough, I'm not going to like answer that question, but you're running in the same place. And this, going off of what you said, like they're showing up on Sundays, oh my gosh, had this amazing day and this amazing word and an amazing feeling, but the feeling faded on Tuesday. Now what? Like, where's the transformation? Where's the action with faith coupled together moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where is that? And that's why I go back to, if you say you're spiritually disciplined, if you have self-dominion, if you have this reverence and you have this connection with the Holy Spirit, but you have like your emotional and your physical down here, again, I have to challenge it. Like, well, what type of relationship do you have with God? Like, God, walking with Jesus, there is a requirement for growth, plain and simple. Plain and simple.
Yeah. And it's crazy that in right now I've been like really studying and just been paying attention to like the early Christians, right? Like the book of Acts and just the early church, where the sign of a Christian, like you were going to get persecuted. And a true Christian would not bow down to the Roman gods, no matter if they were going to get like tar, burnt alive, beheaded, thrown into the gladiator with the animals, like whatever, right? Like that would be the sign. Do you truly believe? If you can face persecution, then it was like you were a Christian, right? There's no doubt about it. And it's sad to think that now our persecution is our junk food cravings, our scrolling. Like our persecution does not look anything and we still succumb every time. Like it's sad.
All right. One last thing before we end off, because this is going to be a long episode.
This is a long episode.
And I'm going to have to edit it for the next 2 days before we go camping.
Oh, yeah.
We're going camping this weekend. It's going to be awesome.
My goal is to hopefully get at least one run in.
You could definitely do it. That's completely up to you.
Then I'll do it.
going back to the temple. You weren't going to touch on it. So what? I'm going to touch on it for you and you can go on your spiel. We are the temple. We are the temple. Some people see, you know, the temple, the building itself. What is the difference between taking care of the outer temple and the inner temple? Because a lot of people take care of the outer temple, meaning what do we look like?
Mm.
And we go back to like what you said before, like, I don't care about what I look like.
Yeah.
Although you kind of do, but like you're trying not to, right? But people care about what they look like, right? And this section right here.
Part three.
In this section right here, I don't want this one for sure. I'm not going to say I'm radical because I'm not. I'm not going back to, you know, like the no makeup and all that stuff. But the importance between the outer appearance and the inner appearance, both in our temple, our body, and in the church.
I do think God, like if he had, this is what I think, obviously, but according to like the scripture, I do think like there is some merit into like your outer temple. Mm-hmm. Cause it even says like when you're fasting, like don't be like woe me, right? Or like destroying your faces or like ruining your clothes where you're just like, oh, right. Like there was an emphasis in like outer appearance or even in the tabernacle and with the temple, like the outside, like there was beautiful adornments and instructions and guidelines that he wanted. But inside the temple, right, you got the holies and then the holiest of holies. Mm. Like it's like as you go in and as you go deeper, like it became more important, more sacred. And so I think in that same way, we're like, I think in the outside, he's like, okay, you want to wear makeup, you want to fix yourself, you want to get surgery, like that's okay. But if I go more in there, like what am I going to find? I should go more in there and it look more beautiful. Mm-hmm. It should be more sacred. Mm. And yeah, there is, I think women more, but even men, like with Vane, where their focus is, it can go again, that's where I say to the extreme, where people are working out every single day, but they never go to church or they're rude to their neighbors.
Yeah.
Or they just give like stink face, like it's like, ew, like you're just so conceited and so prideful, I can't talk to you. Like that's ugly too. And so it's like, okay, am I gonna get captivated by the outside? Cause God made, like woman was like the pinnacle of his creation. And woman, so beautiful. And I do think, like just like Queen S, like there is merit to your outer beauty, but it's to capture that eye so that they meet with you and they can talk to you. They're like, wow, there's something about their essence. It's even more beautiful than their outside.
And that's when you get the people that go like, you're beautiful in the inside and outside.
Yeah. And so I don't think like outside beauty, no, let's just be as ugly as we can because that's going to make us more humble, because the religious people thought that too. The more humble and poor we look, the more spiritual we are. Mm. And it's like, no, I think God likes beauty. He, look at what he created. Like how beautiful are the mountains? How beautiful is the sky? Mm-hmm. But it's so that we can get to know him, which is even more beautiful and more glorious. And so the outside should be beautiful. I do think it should be beautiful, but it's just to capture, once they get to know you, it's to capture them more and be like, wow, that's true beauty.
Yeah, the superficial, I feel like from what you're saying, what I'm thinking about right now, the superficial is inviting.
Yeah.
Then you go inside and then you're like, okay, now let's see what's going on inside, mm-hmm. right? Same thing with church, like, you know, like having the whole production or having the outside look beautiful or very inviting. Like people go like, oh, like this is a place that it looks like I want to be.
Yeah.
Then you enter into the building and you get to know the people. And the same thing, like, wow, like this person has a lot of muscles. They look toned. They look beautiful. They have mm-hmm. beautiful makeup. They know how to do it. They know how to dress. Like, I want to get to know this person. It's inviting.
Yeah.
People are attracted to that type of thing. Mm-hmm. It's like a moth to a flame. Like, oh my gosh, like, let me get to know this person more. But the true test. And then it goes back to the vulnerability as well. Mm-hmm. Because people can only go so far as you let them. And then it goes back to with the mask. Because sometimes that outside very attractiveness can just be a mask. Mm-hmm. And behind that mask is some ugliness.
Yeah.
So that's where I believe you were talking to me a couple of weeks ago is like, yeah, the outside, the superficial stuff is important. It's nice. It's beautiful. But the most important thing is what's in the inside. What's in the inside? Like, is the inside beautiful as well?
Yeah.
Is the inside loving and caring? Is it purposeful? Like, will it embrace you? But there's some people that like, yeah, I look beautiful on the outside, but stop right there. And then this could be debatable, but, and they stop you right there and they justify it with, there's only like a certain few that get close to me. I don't trust many people. I've had problems with people trusting people. So God has told me to put boundaries. Boundaries are healthy. And sure, boundaries are healthy. But God also calls you to be vulnerable.
Yeah. That's good. And so I don't ever want to say I'm never going to get like surgery or anything like that, because I don't know. The truth is, I don't know. And I always go back and forth with I am, I'm not, like with you, like when I talk to you about it. But all I know is that I do not want to get surgery before I do any work. Like, I'm going to put in the work. I'm going to become the best version that I can be.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then if I want to, like, awesome. I put in hard work. Like, the outside should match. Like, I can, I'm like coming to that realization that I can make my abs as strong as they can and they'll still be wrinkly, because the fact is it's extra skin. Like, that skin can't go anywhere. So then I might decide.
You need collagen, you know, tighten up.
So then I might decide, okay, let's remove this, right? Let's get that tummy tuck. I want to put in the work. I want to do the transformation. I want to put in those habits. I want to become the best version of myself. And I want to make sure I love myself, that I can look in the mirror and see that skin and not be like, this is ugly. Like, not doubt of like, God loves me, not doubt that he created me beautiful, not doubt that there's a beautiful story behind that. Like, if I feel like I can't be honest and like work so hard, but also see God's goodness and his creation in me, then I don't want to change it.
Right.
So that's where I'm at with that journey.
Nice. But
this is a, I thought I came in here thinking this was going to be like a 40-minute conversation, and it's a minute and an hour and a half almost, but just goes to show like the temple is super important. I think we could have gone in deeper in multiple of those topics, but I just hope you guys that it doesn't become an afterthought, that we can start and ask God, like, God, may the thoughts I have be more like your thoughts, that I not think about this when it's too late. Let's be self-aware. When am I putting more energy in my day? Is that really important? Where should I maybe like decrease or maybe ignore, maybe put to the side and focus on my health, focus on my rest, focus on my relationships? Life is too short, you guys, to just continue living the way we are. God does have an abundant life for you, but it starts with self-care. That is truly stewardship of what he's given us. And he has given us this body, which he has called good. And so love yourself and what that truly looks like, the way that God loves you. And I feel like when we are rooted in our identity that we are so loved, we are going to truly love and take care of ourselves. But it has to be with our identity. And so if you've been struggling to form that identity, reach out to your pastors, to therapists, to books. Like, there's so many resources for you, for us to stay the same. And it just takes 1% every single day to get better. And so with that, we hope you guys have a great rest of your day or weekend. I can't wait to go camping, be in God's nature, and love on ourselves a little bit more. But until the next episode, bye.
See ya.